FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Terry Lutz. It's 6618. And, well, we got a lot coming up this coming week. We got the G7 meeting. We got trade wars heating up. Fed interest rate increase imminent, apparently, for next week. It's graduation season, and that means you get to finish up college and start paying off your student loans, and there'll be more time permitting. Hey, as always, be a part of the show. Join us in the dialogue. Make my day. Best part of the day is when your emails are in my inbox in the early a.m., and I enjoy reading and answering them with a cup of Java. Hey, in the meantime, Jordan Goodman here, moneyanswers.com. And Jordan, as always, welcome back. And we got a lot to talk about.
You do. Great to be with you again, Kerry. Yeah, a lot of dramatic things going on in the world right now.
Yeah, so G7 coming up. And hey, not to mention the North Korean summit with Trump and Rocket Man.
Right. And, that's, Little Rocket Man.
Yeah, Little Rocket Man. Well, you know, maybe he doesn't look so little anymore. Now he's a big man on the stage. In fact, Jordan, I even heard that Trump is holding out an invitation to Mar-a-Lago for Rocket Man, assuming that the upcoming summit is successful. Hey, look, I would gladly give up all my nukes to go hang out with Trump at Mar-a-Lago, and probably Rocket Man feels the same way.
We'd have to pay for the trip because he can't afford to, and he doesn't have an airplane that would go that far, so we'd have to pay for it, as we're going to have to pay for the hotel in Singapore somehow. But it's a momentous time coming because the G7 is basically going to be a beatdown on Trump. All the other six countries there are not happy with us. And then he's going to go directly from there to try to take the Nobel Peace Prize in Singapore.
Yeah.
Never had such a situation like this. I mean, the other countries, and China is not part of the G7, by the way.
So correct.
Britain, Italy, it's all the traditional countries are very mad at us for what's happening on the trade front. I mean, these are supposedly our allies, and yet we've put the steel and aluminum tariffs on them and are possibly going to do more than that. And they've already retaliated against us. This is on top of the steel and aluminum tariffs on China, which had already been in effect. And then on June 15th, Trump talks about enumerating which specific products from China will have an additional 25% tariff, total of $50 billion, could be 1,000 different products. So China's mad at us too. Now, maybe this is a really great negotiating technique and you get people really mad at you and they come around and concede. But I just don't think it's going to work out that way, Kerry. I just think you push people into a corner and they react like they can't back down. And you've got places like Canada. I mean, Trudeau, you know, our best friends, we've been battling with you in wars and now you turn on us, this kind of thing. It's just, it's getting people very, very mad at us around the world.
Well, I think reports of the defeat of Donald Trump are greatly exaggerated and premature. And Jordan, you know, look, these countries have been taking advantage of the United States for decades now.
Yeah, I agree.
Countries broke, can't afford it anymore. We've had major structural damage to our economy, and that's what so many free traders refuse to recognize. And Canada, Mexico have just become little more than transshipment points for Chinese goods, especially in the form of auto parts, to come over the borders with no tariff at all. And so, yeah, of course.
You're right. I think NAFTA may be finished, actually.
I think it's
They've been trying to get make progress. They made a little bit of progress, but not enough to get it across the border. And now they've got the tariffs on Canada and Mexico. And a big change is about to happen in Mexico. On July 1st, they're having their presidential election. And highly likely, the guy who's going to win is named Raul Obrador, who is a far left-wing socialist, kind of a Hugo Chavez, anti-American type. And he's going to come in with a huge majority and be even more antagonistic to the United States than before. So if, what happens if NAFTA is ripped up, which I think is likely to happen right now, it won't be a transshipment point anymore because we won't have a NAFTA to have them get in that way.
Hey, well, if it keeps the Mexican trucks off the United States highways, then in my book, it's a good thing.
But NAFTA is a big part of our economy, and both the Canadian side and the Mexican side, that would be very, very disruptive to a lot of things. So, I mean, maybe that's the way we're going to go and, you know, blow up these deals. NAFTA, we've already blew up the TPP, although they went ahead and did it, the other 11 countries anyway. Europe is very mad at us. Now, China made a little bit of concessions when Wilbur Ross, the Commerce Secretary, was over there over the last weekend. Apparently, they said they'd be willing to buy $70 billion more of U.S. products than before. So that's some progress. But they don't even admit the problems, the major problems for stealing technology and intellectual property. The Chinese don't even agree that's an issue, never mind that they're going to solve it. So bashing people over the head, maybe it's going to work, but it hasn't been working so far.
Hey, you know, Jordan, if you want to make an omelet, you got to break some eggs.
Well, we're breaking a lot of eggs, but I don't see the omelet yet. Hey. So what's been amazing to me is that the stock market keeps doing extremely well, despite all this impending, it's more than impending trade war, it's actual trade war at this point. And particularly international companies, you know, if you're Boeing, you're sending a quarter of your airplanes to China. If you're Caterpillar, if you're 3M, all kinds of major companies are really going to get hurt if they either raise tariffs to American goods or embargoes in some cases, and particularly agricultural products. Apparently, there have been some ships going towards China with soybeans and corn, and they've turned them around because they're not going to accept them. And they're going to buy corn and soybeans from Argentina and Canada and other places as well. So that's going to hurt U.S. farmers. So maybe this is a grand game and it's all going to come out fine, but that's not what seems to be happening right now. And you're going to see that this weekend at the G7.
Well, that's what you might see publicly. But as you know, most of the news happens behind the scene, the real news, yes. Not what yes. what the media reports here. I have a feeling the picture is quite a bit different than its public portrayal. A lot of it's just for the benefit of cameras and for the media, and a lot of it's created out of whole cloth. You know, a trade war, it's not going to be like Smoot-Hawley in the Great Depression.
Nothing, I hope not.
Nothing
well,
like
why
that.
Do you think, I must ask him, why do you think it's going to work out well? You think the pressure that we're applying to them will ultimately force them to open up and lower barriers, lower tariffs the way we want?
Well, if you look at Canada and Mexico, Mexico is the U.S.'s seventh largest trading partner. So we're there first, of course, and like 80% of their trade focuses on the U.S.
Right.
So they don't have a choice. They're going to have to capitulate or really send that country reeling. And don't forget, if they wanted to solve the illegal immigration problem, the Mexican government, they could do it in less than a week. But the fact is they've been feeding it. And I think that all talks of trade wars and everything else, as far as with Mexico is concerned, is subterfuge for the huge underlying problem of the porous border. And it's not just enough to build a wall. You got to have cooperation from Mexico. Eventually, they're going to cooperate. You know, we always see in politics, the far left seldom ever is as far left or rules from the far left as they claim they were going to, because a little thing called reality intrudes. Canada will work itself out because the relationship is so long-standing and deep, and they don't have a lot of alternatives. Look, you know, if the U.S. put a $15, $20 barrel tariff on their oil exports to the U.S., it would shut down about half the Canadian economy.
Right.
So they've got no choices. The U.S. has the leverage over those two countries. And, you know, you combine it with defense and such, it's just not going to be what anybody is claiming. And whatever Trump achieves is going to be a victory because of all of the ominous rumblings around the world. And it's never going to be as bad as is claimed. It just can't be, because the world is so much more interconnected and interdependent.
You're right. If that happens, if your scenario works out, Kerry, that is incredibly bullish.
That's what the market's
really,
telling
really
us.
Positive, for our economy, for the world economy, and because that's not what people are thinking right now. So I hope you're right, but that would be a turn from the way at least publicly, as you said, the direction things are going.
Right? You know, Trump is a bull in the China shop until it gets down to the realistic negotiations and him getting his major goals through. It's just not going to be what anyone's saying. And that's what the market is telling us.
Yes.
Its refusal to roll over and play dead is certainly indicative that things are not really what they seem.
Yes. And that's true as far as interest rates as well. I mean, here you have the Federal Reserve next week is going to raise interest rates for the second time, probably raise them again in September, maybe December. We'll have to see how things go. Normally with Fed being pretty aggressive like this, that's normally bad for stocks, and that has not been at all. People are actually looking forward to the Fed raising rates, the so-called normalized things. So that's also a positive indicator that you have clearly rising interest rates, rising much more short-term rates than long-term rates. Long-term, the 10-year Treasury had gotten over 3% for a while. Now it's back down to about 2.9 or so. So the yield curve is flattening. Short rates are going up. Long rates are staying the same or actually coming down a little bit. And Wall Street's pretty happy about that, actually. So again, normally you wouldn't think rising interest rates would be good, but in this case, it seems to be actually encouraged.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Well, you know, look, it's there's a lot of things going on here. The interest rate increase definitely on the face is negative, but we've had these below market, below yes. real interest rates, discounted interest rates for years now, Jordan, and they've done a lot of damage.
Basically. I mean, the yeah. Fed went down to zero in 2008, December 2008. So it's been almost 10 years that we've had way below market rates. And the people who are really suffering, Kerry, are savers. Okay.
Yeah.
Nobody speaks up for them. But how about the people who have money and CDs and money market funds and savings accounts, pretty mm-hmm. much earning zero? And even as the Fed has been raising short-term rates, when they raise next week, that's going to be, I think, the sixth interest rate increase since 2015. And yet banks have not been raising what they're paying on deposits hardly at all because they don't feel any need to. People just sit there like a lump and take it. And if they don't have to pay them more, why do they? So they just let them sit there earning nothing, and they're charging more because everything, when the Fed raises the Fed funds rate, the prime rate goes up and go up to 5%. And that means that car loans and credit cards and student loans and small business loans, all things tied to the prime, are going up. The bank's profits are widening because of that. So bank shareholders are happy. But I worry about the poor depositor out there who's got their money sitting there literally earning zero.
Yeah, literally. Hey, so you know, we're seeing a return to normalized interest rates, hopefully, probably going to go higher than anyone thinks in yes. the long run, because they've been beaten down for a generation now, been kept right. artificially low. So that's,
which means if you have mm-hmm. money in interest-sensitive vehicles, you're going to get hurt. You already have been. I mean, mm-hmm. the 10-year Treasury was about 2% a year ago, and now it's close to 3%. I think you could go up to 3.5% this year, which means if you have bonds, or what I call bond surrogates, things like real estate investment trusts, utility stocks, master limited partnerships, high yielding stocks in general, those kind of trade like bonds, they're going to get hurt as well. So that's not a great alternative. If you're going to lose more in principal than you're earning in interest on these high yield vehicles, that's a problem for a lot of people. They don't know what to do. I mean, I've got a solution, but I'm just telling you, this is a problem for an awful lot of people, is having money, you know. They're doing it for income, but they're losing a lot of principal at the same time. And I think we'll lose more principal as time goes on here.
Yeah. So how do you protect yourself in this situation? You're the expert.
What I've done, which has been very helpful to a lot of your folks, are what are called secured real estate funds, because it doesn't change in price. The net asset value stays at $10 a share. You get an 8% yield over a one-year time frame. Minimum hold is 1 year, and after that, you can get your money whenever you like. Minimum's $5,000. There's no commissions to get in or out of it at all. There's a website for it, secureredrealestatefunds.com, and they're lending money short-term, like over a year, to commercial real estate projects all over the country, diversified, like 30 different ones, and different types. They've got assisted living, student housing, retail, medical buildings, apartment buildings, all kinds of different things, and they've got a long-term track record of doing this. The maximum that they lend on a particular piece of property is 70% of the value of the property, so there's a big what I call the equity cushion there, that the builder developer always has a lot of skin in the game, and it's worked out real well. So, and you can do it inside an IRA, you can do it outside an IRA. So there's a solution for people who don't want to get zero at the bank or be in a long bond at 2 to 3% and lose principal. Again, the website for that, securedrealestatefunds.com, to earn 8%.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I like that. That's a pretty cool thing. And look, if interest rates are going higher, you're probably going to want to refinance any kind of debt you have that's possible.
Do it sooner rather than later. Right. Yeah, I mean, the 30-year mortgages are up to 5% now, basically. So if you haven't refinanced the last few years, you've been brain dead, basically.
Yeah, totally. Totally. But to refinance the student loans and those.
That's a huge thing. So we just had all these graduations, which is wonderful. Congratulations to all the graduates.
Yeah, now the bill comes.
Start paying back your debt.
Congratulations. The bill is on its way.
So the average person graduated this year with $39,400 in student loan debt. That's the average. 30 years, typically. And many of them have 50, 100, 150,000. A lot of people either take 5 years to get through college or drop out, and they've got the debt without the degree at this point. So that's a real problem for an awful lot of people. About 20 to 25% of it is either in default or delinquency. We talked several years ago, Kerry, about the student loan bubble. Well, it's bursting right now as we speak here, because people just cannot afford this amount of debt and still have a life. Over 50% of the people graduating this year are going back and living at home again, because they can't, even if they have a job, they can't afford to rent an apartment, get a car, start a family, kind of get on with their life, and service the student loan debt at the same problem at the time. It's a huge problem. So as you mentioned, that is one solution for people, is they can refinance their student loan debt into typically 2 to 3%, which is a lot better than 6 or 10 or whatever else you're paying. There's a website for that too, which is called Credible. And their website is credible.com/moneyanswers. They know it's me that way. You get $200 off your first payment. And it's a platform. They've got about 5 or 6 different lenders, credit unions and others, who will give you different programs. And so you can refinance both student debt and also the parents. Parent plus loans are huge too. So both parents and students are taking on a lot of debt in this college season. And that's one thing that can help them.
Yeah, and repayment is right around the corner, right?
Well, it's typically 6 months. You get 6 months after you graduate to have to start making payments again. Now, the interest is still accruing, but you don't have to be making payments for at least 6 months.
Yeah.
But you got to go out and get a job. Now, it's a good job market. I mean, that's the good part, is that graduates this year, if they've got majors or skills that are in demand, they should do quite well. They should get some decent jobs out there. The problem is a lot of people don't have skills or majors that are of interest to employers. The recent so-called JOLTS report came out, the job openings listing, 6.5 million unfilled jobs. Employers are desperate to hire people in many cases, but they cannot find the people, either the work ethic or the skills, who could pass an opioid test to basically get into these jobs. It's a huge problem. I heard today that there are more job openings than there are people unemployed right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's more openings than there are job applicants, but still we don't see the workforce participation rate. It is creeping up a little under Trump, but it hasn't gone up that much, not a substantial number.
The latest is 62.7%.
Right.
But you've got to remember, you have all these baby boomers retiring. Something like 10,000 a day turn 65. And so a lot of those are retiring. So that's they're dropping out of the workforce, not because they don't want to work, but they're retiring. So, and you don't have as many people coming in, and we're restricting immigration to some extent. So I think we're doing pretty well at 62.7, considering the demographic of the situation.
Mm-hmm. So just standing still, we're doing well because the replacement workers coming in are less than the baby boomers departing. And I'm sure you've read the recent stories, the past 2 days, of course, it's coming out, that Medicare is insolvent and Social Security this year dug into its so-called reserves, which the reserves are simply government bonds that have to get sold off. So they get monetized, right? I mean, that's exactly what the Fed's going to do.
I think they said that Social Security is going to go broke, in effect, 3 years earlier than they thought before.
But it's really already
the first year that they're not as that they're paying out more than they're bringing in Social Security taxes. This is the first year that's actually started to happen. Yeah. Like it's something like 2032 or something like that.
34.
Is where they will have gone through this mythical trust fund, which is like $3 trillion.
Yeah.
But it's a bookkeeping entry. There's not a bank account with $3 trillion waiting to pay Social Security benefits out there.
I thought there was a lockbox in Washington and only the president had the key. You mean
I've actually seen the lockbox. It's not in Washington. It's in West Virginia, actually.
Oh, okay.
I went there. There's a Department of Treasury. It's the same place where they issue savings bonds from.
Oh,
and,
really?
I actually went there. And in addition to that, they keep track of the federal deficit in great, great detail. There are rows and rows. You'd love this place, Gary. There are rows and rows of people who keep track of every government expenditure. You know, how many screws are in this particular Air Force fighter or something like that.
Yeah, well, somebody's got to count.
They add it all up every day. And it's a big... It's behind a safe, but you can get in there. And they have different drawers, and each drawer is how much we owe. So, like, that drawer is the Social Security Trust Fund. Mm-hmm. And this drawer is the Medicare Trust Fund, whatever it may be.
That's ridiculous.
And there it is, right there. And every day, literally, they write out a certificate saying, the United States owes, you know, $4.1 trillion to the Social Security Trust Fund, whatever it may be.
Yeah.
And there it is. I've actually seen the lockbox.
You do understand how ridiculous that is.
It is.
So, obviously.
It's bookkeeping is what it is.
Yes. Yeah, it's bookkeeping entries and totally meaningless until the value of the dollar starts to plunge. But one thing we didn't talk about yet, and we'll kind of make it the last thing, in the light of the so-called trade wars, in light of all the negative things happening, the U.S. dollar is ascending yet again.
And yes,
how long it'll last is anybody's guess. But when you look at Europe, maybe things aren't so bad here in the good old U.S. of A.
Right. Well, you see what's happening in Italy. They've had all this political and kind of Euroskeptics now taking over. I mean, the euro could be really under threat. We thought it was under threat a few years ago when Greece had its crisis, but Italy's a much bigger deal. And then throughout Europe, you have these right-wing kind of anti-Brussels parties winning just this week, Slovenia, Hungary, Poland, all kinds of places, kind of anti-Brussels. Mm-hmm. Brexit, of course, is happening at the same time. So Europe is definitely looking much weaker, and our interest rates are rising, as we said. So that makes us look more attractive, both politically and as a place to put your money. So that's Larry Kudlow always talks about king dollar. And that's, in fact, what's been happening lately. So the dollar has been rising.
Yeah, totally. Really fascinating. I mean, today the dollar's down a little bit. It's down 0.45 against the euro, but there are these gyrations. But the trend here of the dollar going up, we don't know how high it's going to go up, but certainly the trend here has reasserted itself.
And that's good for the U.S. stock market as well.
Yeah.
It attracts people. And one of the reasons this dollar is going up is people want to invest in the U.S. stock market. I mean, if you look at what's driving the market, it's clearly the technology stocks. I mean, mm-hmm. Facebook and Google and Microsoft and Salesforce, NVIDIA, all these companies, that's where the driving force is. And they've been taken off. The rest of the market's doing okay, but it's really led by technology. And some people are worried about it, saying it's too narrow a leadership in the market. Mm. I frankly think it's relatively healthy. These companies, even though they've gone up a lot, their earnings are rising so much that their valuations are not ridiculous. This is not the dot-com boom of 2000 at all. These companies, these highly profitable companies, Apple, Microsoft, they're trading at 15, 16 times earning. No, nothing stratospheric at all.
Hey, and we should take a look back at the impact of the tax cut and its continuing impact. Companies are still giving out increases. They're still realizing humongous increases in their profits. I mean, this is bigly, right?
And buying back a lot of stock, a lot. I mean, Apple had $100 billion stock buyback and raising dividends. They raised the dividends 16% at the same time. Johnson & Johnson just did the same thing. So, yes, they are making capital expenditures. They are adding wages and bonuses to some extent. But I think the majority of what I call the windfall is going to stock buybacks and, you're having the dividend increases, which is good for stockholders. Yeah, I mean, stockholders is a very broad category, but it's not everybody. I mean, there's a lot of Americans that do not have exposure to the stock market, and they're not benefiting at least directly from that.
And that's for now. If the economy continues to grow, the stock buybacks, at least in theory, should decrease and you should see added additional investment into their core business, into expansion, into capacity, et cetera. Whether that will prove short-lived or not, we don't know. But hey, so Jordan, there's a place we can go to on your site. Yes. Where you explain.
I've actually got a special landing page for your folks particularly, which is moneyanswersman.com/2018. And I've got all kinds of special things there that you can get. And I've got newsletters, and I actually have a YouTube channel now with all kinds of videos. Cool. And resources. We've just mentioned a few of them, Kerry. But right. I'd like to offer specific things to your folks. So there's a free place to go, moneyanswersman.com/2018, and they can get all kinds of goodies.
All right. moneyanswersman.com/2018. And
correct.
We find it there. A lot of good things and a lot of good ideas there. So you really should take a look. Anyway, Jordan, thanks for coming on. As always, feel free to send Jordan any emails. We'll forward them on to him. And while you're at it, take a look at the website, financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Sign up for the newsletter. Jordan, it's great talking to you, catching up.
Thanks so much, Karen. I'm glad to get emails from them as well, at moneyanswers.com. You bet.
You got it.
Thank you.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get 3 free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.